Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. My name is Todd Embley. I'm here with my co-host, Ryan Shugan.
Hey, everyone.
There he is. Says hi. We are here today with Bunny Yan, the founder and CEO of Squirrels, or thesquirrels.com. Yep. And we talked about a lot of different things here because Squirrels is in the upcycling industry.
And if you're wondering what that is, she explains it better than me.
We're not going to try and do that.
But basically what it means is she's a trailblazer. She's doing something new in China that's never been done before, and it's pretty new for the world.
Yeah, exactly. And so we talk about the ins and outs and the difficulties therein, how she approaches it, where she's trying to position herself and her company, because it started with an offline retail store where she's now taking it online, digitally, what this whole, you know, bringing fashion and technology along with eco and trying to find the right intersection.
Yeah, and the markets.
And how to differentiate yourself and how she does the marketing.
Yeah, the market, like, you know, she is more obsessed with, instead of making asks of people to come and buy things, she's more obsessed with building an understanding of what it means to be an upcycler or in that space. And then if they are interested in the content, then they'll come to them.
Yeah. And then the interesting things, we won't take her taglines, but how she talked about how she acquires or attracts customers versus how she retains customers.
Yeah.
And it was the opposite of how she thought that would go. It actually turned out to be the reverse of it. So we'll let her talk about that. And then just a little bit about her team, because her team is almost all foreign, and here in China, and how that's working and why she does it that way, which is a little bit unique. But then, you know, Bunny is an
entirely international team.
Yeah. And then how is something like the Squirrels and upcycling received by investors? When you're trailblazing in a new area and a new industry, you know, how are you able to talk to investors about what you're doing? How are you able to get them interested and giving you some money?
Yeah, amazing lessons learned there.
Yeah, really hard. So anyway, onwards and upwards. Listen in. Hope you enjoy.
Hey, everyone. We're here with Bunny Yan, and I just want to give you guys a short intro into her history and what she's been through. So,
who is Bunny?
Yeah, who is Bunny?
What is Bunny?
Yeah, oh, is good Bunny? Question.
It's a good one.
We'll start with that after Ryan does this intro.
So she was born in Shanghai, but raised in Jersey. She worked in fashion in New York, and she attended the Fashion Institute of Technology. She's been basically doing fashion and couture houses and things like that for all of her life. And she ended up in Shanghai in
7 years ago.
Yeah, 7 years ago. And in 2013, started a upcycling store called Squirrels. Welcome to the show, Bunny.
Hey.
Yeah. Squirrels was an offline outlet store, right?
Yeah, it started as an offline shop.
So
all these buzzword that
So the first thing we got to do for everybody is, what the F is upcycling?
What is upcycling? I get that question every single time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not gonna assume you even know what recycling is. I hope you do. So that's pretty much
the listeners.
Our listeners
don't even know what.
So pretty much when you have, like, you know, paper, plastic, anything that can be melted down or reconstructed back into its original form. So you have your recycled paper, recycled plastic. Mm-hmm. Upcycling is, instead of I'm taking the object and breaking it down to its base material, I'm using it and use a characteristic of it to make something else. One example is this brand been around for a long time, Freitag. What they do is they use the truck tarps, right? Mm-hmm. Recycled truck tarp, clean up and make into different bags, right? Mm-hmm. So that's upcycling, because I'm not breaking that truck tarp into lesser of a material. I'm actually making it into more viable one.
Is that like the bag when I go to IKEA and I get the big blue bag?
Oh, those
I bought too much stuff again. And I was unprepared.
But those can be used as that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the essence, really, of why is upcycling so interesting to me is that you're not just using the material and go like, okay, I can fit that into this bag model. No. You look at the material, what you got, and you see, like, what's the characteristic of this material I have. Mm-hmm. So for the tarp, it's like it's weatherproof, right? Very strong, resistant. Mm-hmm. So that as bag material, it's perfect.
Small, thin, yeah. malleable.
Yeah. It's not like I'm trying to stick it in. Like, okay, I'm making a bag anyway. I'm just trying to find material. It's kind of the other way around. Mm-hmm. So one of the first product that we created, how the inspiration where the squirrels come from, is because we found doctor's uniform.
Scrubs.
Like, scrubs, yeah. They're very colorful if you ever watch any trauma
show. All different colors, yeah.
Yeah. Grey's Anatomy, whoever, scrubs. So they are very sturdy because they need to be withstand like multiple washing, right? Mm-hmm. So the color very vibrant, right? So which means I can make into something that can not only hold, it's very strong mm-hmm. and able to fold and able to wash. So yeah, I also made that into a bag mm-hmm. because it just for that material, it's perfect. Right. So these scrubs in the factory that I found, they are perfectly new. The only defects is they're, you know, the color is like too dark or the size is a little bit off. So as in fashion industry, yeah, if you give me mauve, I'm asking for purple. Yeah, I can't sell it because that's not the season color. Right. But as a product, they're perfectly fine. But just that if you're in China factory and you got like 1,000 pieces of scrubs, that does not fit any kind of qualification, there's no way you can get rid of that, especially as a manufacturer. Right?
So this is like a dead asset to them. What do they do? Yeah. They usually throw this out.
If there's like not label or anything, they just sell it to the garbage collector, right? But yeah. when you start coming to like branded stuff, a lot of brands require to burn them.
By law.
Yeah. And the amount of stuff that you need
you have to
burn
destroy it.
Is
legally.
Oh, yeah, because they don't want the bad quality brands to leak out. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and there's actually not really a sector that you can look up to call the upcycle designers, right? Because this type of designer, you really have to like understand so many different type of design and material to be able to have found something and think about what to create with it. But since like I've been in this industry, I love product design as well. Like I've done so many different type. Yeah, I love inventing. So when I see a material, we literally just start searching like what industry it can be used. It's almost never in the same industry.
Mm-hmm. What about the difference between the West? And I don't know why that always makes me think of America, but the West, Europe, wherever that is, outside mm-hmm. China, in the
more
developed
acceptable.
Countries,
yeah.
Versus in China. I mean, is upcycling, I think, is probably quite a thing.
Upcycling
there,
in China right now is still considered to be something you do to save money, right? So example, like if I cut my plastic bottle in half and use as change, yes, it technically counts as you using for something else, right? Mm. But that's really for money saving purposes. It's not really for fashion or whatever.
Yeah.
So what we're doing with Squirrel really is to bring the beauty and the fashion part, the functionality part mm-hmm. into the design, right?
Yeah.
So I'm using this material, I'm making it even better things. It's not because like, for that, I am just to save money, make a cheaper quality of something. No, yeah. I'm hiding up the value.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of time, like if I don't show our products, it's really hard for people to imagine. So when I say like, yeah, I have an eco business, everybody, okay, so bags, right? Plastic bottles. I might know you'll see like clutches made from like misprinted packagings. You have like earring made from bullet shells. And no, a lot of time, if I don't tell you what they're made out of, they're just very beautiful, fashionable products.
Yeah.
Right.
So you started with the offline store.
Uh-huh.
I imagine that you weren't designing all the products in the store yourself. You were sourcing.
Curating. Yeah.
Curating.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But was it difficult to find?
I thought it will be.
It seems like it would be. I just, to me, it's like
it seems
how many
like
people would
be.
Actually do that?
Yeah.
Despite the 1.2 really billion here, you know?
First of all, like, I am still in my foreigner circle. mm-hmm. So, but in the beginning, you go to like different creative markets. You do see handmade, handcraft stuff, which is stuff I'm not focusing on. I'm really looking at like how the process is, right? So what I was focusing on is things that are upcycled, recycled, straight from nature. So like natural wood, flowers, or things that for good cause. So if they are made by disabled families, helping low income, stuff like that. You'd be surprised how many people are already doing that. But since there is really no channel for them to like categorize them all together, like a positive impact platform, right? So they either get categorized as just crafts, right? Mm-hmm. And or they get just stuck in regular mass production designs, right? But the unique part about upcycling, people think that you can just make like unique item. Not so. Since factories continue to make all of these defective products, you have to. The people makes mistakes, right? So 1-5% of the entire production every single day is defects, right? Yeah. So you can make new products that's consistent in quality and consistent in design for upcycling products. So you can have mass production on unique products.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
I mean, you could, I mean, there are containers of glass, rubber, leather, you know, textiles, you know, that are, you know, produced literally as waste every day, whether they're just clippings or what's cut off or shaved off the side of something or whatever. And that's actually a bit of a cost center. Yep. For manufacturers, because they now usually have to pay. It's like, hey, I've got these containers of waste that I now have to pay to dispose of.
Sometimes you got to pay to take it away.
So you're you know, it's not hard to get their buy-in to start turning it your way. And as long as designers are interested, I think on the designer end, if they know anything about finance, your cost of goods sold is, you know, next to nothing. So that's helping your bottom line. And it's just a matter of sourcing them and helping them to actually get onto what is now an online platform, right? So what is Squirrels Today?
Squirrels Today is irrigation of pretty much creative people's marketplace. So we focus on like trash to treasure. So one end, we're providing a platform for all the impact designer, passive impact designer with a platform to sell their products. On the other end, we're sourcing all the defects, reusable material from factories to sell it to designers. Like a lot of time people seeing eco products are higher pricing, right? But what essentially it is, because like a lot less persons doing it, which means you buy lesser quantity, right? Which means price goes up, right? So now with us able to source this material where they need it at a quantity, doesn't really matter because they're a smaller one. They're huge ones when it comes to overstock and defects. So yeah, they can essentially cut eco product costs down as well. And with our sourcing platform, I can turn any designer into upcycle designer.
What are the main reasons that your customers, you know, so you have clients, which would be kind of the designers on the B2C platform, Squirrels. Why do the C come to the platform to purchase and buy? I mean, you must have talked to them. You must know them. Why are they coming to your platform? Is it for the fashion? Is it for the eco reason? You know, are they looking to give back? I mean, what is their motivation?
That's one thing that we're still trying to figure out.
A little elusive?
No. But in the beginning, I always thought it's they come for the fashion because it's pretty. Then they stay for the story because after you hear the story, you know, you get
locked in.
So you actually do come back all the time to hear different stories and to see cooler things, right? But online, it's exactly opposite, right?
Yeah.
Because like you no longer have the person just coming in and you can lock them into, right? So now you have the social media to push your article out, right? But you're not going to push the fashion part. You're in battle with freaking everybody when you're pushing the fashion part, right? So now you're pushing the story part. So now they're coming for the story and stay for the fashion. So it's very interesting. So you get the older customer who's like still the same way before, right? Come for the fashion first. And now you have the new ones that are into the story and with the background of it first. Then stay for the fashion.
It's amazing. This whole, the whole reason, like how this works and why, it's really interesting to me because do you think this is something like the idea of upcycling and this whole entire kind of a business model, industry, you're building, could happen anywhere else but China? Like, could it happen anywhere else? Or is it specific to China right now because of the epicenter of so many factories and kind of thing like that?
The uniqueness of why I can be different other than like other Western platform is that. What I feel, because like I am like Chinese born and raised in the States, so I do have both sides, right? So for me to able to tap into the Chinese factories and able to see all these beautiful new things that I can use for raw material is a huge advantage to the West, right? For the West, it's harder for you to actually go to the factory and trying to find insufficient production, right? And see how you can channel that. Logistic alone is very, very intensive because like not, their factory is a lot more spread out, right?
Yeah.
Whereas China, it's so concentrated. Mm-hmm. There's like 60,000 listed fashion factory in Shanghai area alone. Right?
Shanghai's like you could just spend your entire time just hitting up these factories, convincing them.
So you're leveraging not only the quantity, but also the inefficiency of Chinese manufacturing.
Ooh,
sensitive topic.
Well, yeah, I think
no,
that's
that a lot
you know,
of
you talked about finding the inefficient. You know, manufacturers in the U.S.
Yeah,
and that would potentially have a lot of waste.
That's the reason why developing country is so much more interesting.
Because there's less governmental legislative pressure for them to be more efficient
one is that,
and less wasteful.
Number two, they're learning, right?
Yeah.
Which means they already started doing production their own way and realized, okay, by doing this way, I'm causing this much waste, right?
Yeah.
But I, at the point, I don't really know how to do anything about it, right? Mm-hmm. It's same thing as like corporate CSR. One of the girl I talked to, she said something about corporate CSR that's very funny. She said that it's kind of like teenage sex, right? So everybody wants it, everybody talk about it, but nobody actually know how to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm like, this is exactly same thing with waste, right? So for factories, like, okay, why don't I just link them with designer directly? No, that's time consuming, right? Who want to talk to like literally small designer one by one to figure out each their needs? You don't have staff for that,
mm-hmm.
right? So now, even if you have the means to turn these waste to money or just to get rid of them, right? You need somebody to help you out, right? So last year there's an article, about GM. So they made $1 billion to upcycle their own sheet metals because after like they cut the door out of the car, right, all the edges, mm-hmm. now they move it down to somebody who punched nuts, bolts, and washers out of them. So just that one move made $1 billion.
Wow.
After their first run.
Like you said, it's one man's waste is like waste.
One man's treasure. Yeah. So what that's
well
say,
said, Ryan. Uh-huh.
Waste to treasure.
Waste treasure.
Like, I loved it. Yeah, the word.
Yeah, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's funny because like in the article mentioned, like, yeah, you can make a lot of money just by making that little part more sufficient.
Yeah.
But also it takes a little bit of time and money. Well, it takes money to set up that kind of team, right? So I'm like, yeah, perfect. That's exactly what we're doing. We have the team. You just got to give me the stuff you don't want. No headache whatsoever. And we do all the linking for you. So
nice.
We are liaisoning between everybody.
That's perfect. You're at the intersection of technology, of eco, of inefficiency, and of fashion and design.
And find the opportunity between all that. I love it. Let's get into that more right after the break.
Hey everybody, Todd here. Just want to jump in and thank our sponsors very, very much for the support that they give to us and having our backs in trying to get this podcast going. And so far, so good. I think everybody's given us some really great feedback and it's done well. And in no small part to the backing of China Accelerator, full transparency, I do work for China Accelerator. I am the program director. But everything that they have brought to the ecosystem that we have tried to bring to the ecosystem, I think has been very, very well received. And, I think doing a lot to just promote and nurture the startup ecosystem, not just in Shanghai, but all around China and globally as we get a lot of global companies coming through as well. And, it's just if you want to enter China, as we talk about, we even mentioned it in the show today, if you are thinking about coming to China, I think understanding how difficult China can be and joining forces with China Accelerator to launch your product in China is just something that we find is incredibly valuable and think it's very, very important. Now, we also want to thank PeopleSquared. We are a tenant, so to speak. We live and operate out of PeopleSquared, the Hero Space, which is their flagship operation and space here in the middle of Shanghai, right in downtown Jing'an. They think they have 9 spaces throughout Shanghai. I think they have over a dozen throughout China, one in Shenzhen, up in Beijing. They are the premier co-working space of China right now. And their dedication to community. I was talking with Jenny on the way out the door. about all the new players that have come into the ecosystem here. And Jenny said, you know, we really got to hand it to the People Squared people, because that's, they have their office in People Squared. And she said that it's just their commitment to being so helpful to startups and just working for the startups is just yet to be matched by any other co-working space in China. So kudos to People Squared. My friend Bob Jung, who's the founder, we've had him on the show before. So big thanks to China Accelerator and People Squared for their sponsorship. Really appreciate it.
Hey everyone, we're back. So Bunny, I want to ask a question about being in the market of selling so many new things, new ideas. And is China ready, as an entrepreneur, you coming in China, is China ready for new, for bringing ideas in like you are?
Is China ready for new? Yes. Idea like mine, not yet. Mm-hmm. Why would I say that? Because like in the beginning when we first started a physical shop, it was a bit easier, right? Because like I started with Familiar Foreigner Circle, right? Mm-hmm. It was like 80-20 breakdown for foreigners and Chinese. Later on, I was able to get to 50-50, right? However, China is an extremely price-driven culture, right? I mean, it started to become a little bit more people more into like the quality. However, still price-driven, right? So your competition here is a lot bigger. Ratio's a lot lower, even though there's more people. So we are sourcing it here and selling it mainly overseas first. Now, China's definitely a huge potential to come back later. But honestly, coming back later from overseas to here, it's a lot easier to start it here first and go out, right? Mm-hmm. Because like it is a like educational mindset too, right? It pretty much like right now for them, things are equal. What that means is like things that are more personal to them, which means food, which means clothing, right? So you say organic, fruits and vegetables, organic cotton, they might have some sense, right? But when you start talking about things that are manufactured, like overstock, most foreign, not even sure what that means until mm-hmm. you explain it, right? So you're trying to give them this grand idea and all they want to do is just buy a pair of shoes.
Do they? Do they appreciate unique? Because I ask this because I think that companies like the Louis Vuittons of China are extremely successful, because if you are wearing Louis Vuitton anything, carrying Louis Vuitton anything, it is visible and everybody knows it. And thusly, they don't say, oh, Louis Vuitton, that's really great. It's a, you know, great fashion. They think, cha-ching. They're like, I know how much that costs. That person must be very wealthy. Ergo, they must be very important. Ergo, I should probably get out of their way or something.
Yeah, so
I mean,
right.
It is really about, I mean, this is where people will go to the, mm-hmm. there were restaurants in China, especially mm-hmm. in second, third tier cities, super expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Crappy food, but because it would cost you 5,000 renminbi or maybe even $1,000 for a meal for five or six people, didn't matter whether the food was good or not. It was, you took them to that restaurant because all the people that you were taking there knew how much money you were going to drop on them. And that was why you did it, was because you wanted to show them how much money you had via buying them one of the most expensive dinners they could buy. It wasn't going to be the best dinner they had.
It's a status thing.
It was a status thing, completely mm-hmm. driven by status. Yeah. Now, has that been a problem for you?
Oh,
have you
since
faced
I've been
this
here until now, honestly, that problem has like it's always been there, but you do see a lot more people starts little by little, especially in the
changing,
first tier
right?
country changing. Yeah. So you see people actually start going to brands they like because they like the design or they like the meaning over pricing. Right. Now, majority are still, of course, more pricing driven, but you see the shifting little by little. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm saying like right now, just not now. Right. Later on. Yeah. You got to give them time. Right. So first you fight for survival. Then you fight for status. Right. Then when you get to that point, you start to realize like who you are. What do you want? Then you start changing. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a huge difference between already developed country and developing country. Right. You kind of follow a lot. Right. And China is one of those countries that tends to follow a lot, right? So more people doing it must be true kind
sure.
of deal.
Yeah.
So one thing you can already see a big change is like the trend of vintage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before that, anytime you tell anybody like getting something from somebody else that's secondhand, it's lower quality, lower status, and you're touching somebody else's stuff. It just gross. Right?
Yeah, it's gross. It's like, no, I don't want that. You're like, it's 150 years old and it's beautiful and it's made amazing.
Yeah. But then the European vintage trend, like 2-3 years ago, like just sweep through, right? Then vintage shops are popping up everywhere. So all the trends, you know, chaser ones are really liking that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's possibility to able to make that into a trend and go forward. It's just that right now, the overall upcycling, even in the West, people like haven't heard of, right?
Yeah.
It's just not big enough yet. But if you see all the big brands, like you mentioned, Louis Vuitton and Prada and Gucci, actually they all have stuff on their line that's already upcycled. Just that there isn't a channel to put them all together yet.
Okay, if you're trailblazing as an entrepreneur in China, you're a little bit at the mercy of hoping that people will start trending into an appreciation of what you're doing.
Yes.
You know, or adopting your technology or whatever it is, right? Their human behavior, their habits are going to start adjusting in your favor to help your business grow. Are you donating and dedicating resources from your small team as a startup to helping drive that change? Like, are you guys producing content?
Are you guys
really trying to play a part in that shifting, that tectonic plate shift in China towards being more eco-friendly, more appreciated of unique and design and things like this?
Yeah, loads. So the purpose of those content is really not like, hey, buy my stuff, right? Mm. It's really about like showing people like things that are upcycled, things that are renewed, people that are already changing old churches into apartments, containers into like livable houses or into gardens and planetarium, stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. So all of these things are just really cool reused ideas, right? So it's really the idea of you can use something that's already existing and make them into something more valuable, right? So, you know, the term upcycle, like share economy, there's so many buzzwords out there. When it comes down to it, just pretty much like putting something that's still have value to make it worth it for something else, right?
As you're doing this here in China, I'm just curious where the consumers are gravitating to when you're putting out the content, and it could be pushing a lot of different, you know, very eco-friendly or, you know, environmental or whatever. You know, you could have different angles, but the stories, okay? For those who want to come to China or thinking about coming to China or being an entrepreneur, and a lot of what you're going to do is going to be built on good storytelling. Okay, that's really one of, you know, be your selling point, like what you guys are doing. Yep. People are buying the stories and then coming for the fashion. Yep. What kind of stories, what attitude, what feeling or what agenda of the content are people more gravitating towards than less? Do you know what I mean?
I tend to just go for shits that I found that's cool.
Yeah? You kind of just keep it cool?
Because like,
I mean, if you're going straight, hey, save the planet, is that going to,
That's not even me, right? So you guys know me and you there listening and never seen me before. I'm really not, sorry for the term, tree hugging type. I'm not. I'm into fashion. I love new things. I like modern, right? This is really, you can't just go, all right, we're going to stop mass producing everything. Mm-hmm. Are we going to make everything smart fashion and make everything hands-on? To me, that's not logical, right? To me, everything has to be some form of balance. So you have to have mass production things because you need that much stuff, right? And you can also consume it sensibly because if you're going to have that much stuff anyways, you know, you can find a way to balance that, right? It's not cutting it the angle to one way or the other, right? So going back to the being in the middle part again, right? So that's why upcycling is so interesting to me because you have these raw material that I can use already. I'm just giving it to somebody who's using that. Mm. All right. So it's just finding good channel and just making good business.
Here's an interesting question. How have, as you've raised money, how have investors reacted to what you're doing? Because again, you're kind of
still the middle thing.
you're trailblazing again. Yeah. So there's not a lot of, you know, history of companies that have done what you're doing, so they don't have really have a lot of research to be able to do.
Mm-hmm. That's
how are you being received
when it comes to fundraising, right? I mean, all of these fundraising stuff is very new to me, like 3-4 months ago, right? It's the first time you heard of it. But it's funny, when I talk to the VCs, right, more corporate, as soon as they hear the word social, right, or any kind of environmental angle, they tune out. Right?
Really?
I'm not saying everybody. But because they're thinking that's something that's really hard to scale up, number one. Or the person who's doing it is more into environmental than actually making money, right? So they just don't want to hear about it anymore. And when it comes to the social impact entrepreneur side, right, the impact fund, as soon as they see my angle, number one, they don't really know how to measure it, right? Because I'm not helping a certain group of people, right? So for me, like, I'm helping bunch of different social entrepreneurs selling their product, which means I can help them grow their team and help them helping more people, right? But that's something they cannot measure. So it's not your typical social entrepreneur, right? And then since there's like also the commercial aspect, there's a commission base, whatever. So they don't see how that's like, you know, so much social. So again, I'm stuck in the middle. At one point, I started shifting my pitches, like gear toward one another, right? As what I've been told. But now I'm at the point I'm stopped doing that altogether. Reason being, because if I shifted to cater so-and-so, right? Later on, as soon as they join in, they're going to see, no, that's not how I run my business, right? So you can never find the perfect pitch for everybody. There isn't one, right? Yeah. It's tailored to taste, right? So I can't find the hook that might hook you, right? But I'd rather it to become genuine and what I'm about. So right now, yeah, it's a bit difficult when you stick to that principle. But honestly, the people who you ultimately sign on board know you.
Yeah. Well, you're not out there fishing to catch anything. You're baiting your hook in order to catch a specific type of fish. One that's going to have an appreciation and not come in and then be surprised or disgruntled that it wasn't what they thought they were. I'm going to filter out right away. This is my pitch. If you don't like it, then we probably weren't going to, you know, get along great as investor bestie later anyway. So
it's so funny. Like, you learn all the rules about pitching and about entrepreneurism, right? And then later, little by little, you start to filter out the things that you know, that fits you better, right?
It is.
So yeah, I alter my pitch every now and then when it comes to a good suggestion, right? Yeah. But when it comes to like style wise, like a major difference between the Chinese investors and foreign investors, pitch deck, as soon as you send out, foreign ones like, ah, you can cut out some slides, right? And Chinese ones like, why are there not so much words on this? You didn't even break down every single thing you ever done in your college and your career. I'm like, why am I telling you?
But that's good. So it's funny. It's because I wanted to know if that's the kind of investor you were by the questions you would ask, and now I know. So we're going to leave and I'm going to go.
So now it's like, oh, but you can meet this VC from this big firm. It's like, well, yeah, if I'm not lending it, the person's not going to remember me anyways, right? So which means if I get big enough to find you later on, I'm starting over anyways. So I just don't need you in my back pocket right now. You know. So like making so much connection in the beginning, fine. Because you're trying to figure out who you want to talk to. Right. But then little by little, you realize there's a lot of connection at this point. You don't need them right now, because like after you make the connect, you can't keep it up. Right. So especially my position being a CEO, you got a million and one role that you just have to play. Right. And at the moment, you can't filter any of these out, because you kind of just got to play all of them. Right. You need to lead the team. Right. You need to fundraise, and you need to continue connect and be appearance everywhere else, so people remember you. Right. So then, you start to making your selection and start to filter a lot of people, right? So you start to going like, oh, thank you for your event, you know, but I'm not going to go. Before it's like, oh, that's an event, I'm there.
Yeah, that's the mistake. I mean, that's the general, I mean, I feel like that's the noise that is somewhat of a disturbance of trying to do a startup in some place like the Valley, because you get caught up in the buzz of all the events and all the places that you feel you need to be and all the people that you think you need to be meeting
with an
and all the styles of meetings that you need to be running and all the ways of operating. And, this is our dev cycle and this is how we're running our content. This is how we're managing our social. And you're just like, oh my God, like it's so confusing and there's just so much noise. It can be depressing. But then
it gets overwhelmed very quickly.
The great entrepreneurs, this is one of their keys. This is what makes them great, is that they're able to pick and choose. Yeah. Well, and what I call prune.
Yeah. And that's an experience thing. Like, you know, for what you, your style, for what your team is, what it works.
Sometimes
for you.
not just an experience thing though. Sometimes they're wired right. They're, you know, their gut instincts are on point. Mm-hmm. So that they have a good idea. It's the same way when you're when you're meeting with mentors and they're giving you all kinds of anecdotal advice, you know they know which to take and which to ignore. It just what resonates or not. I want to ask
that's fun. The day that you're talking to a supposedly mentor, in your head just go like, huh, so all the mentors are not on the same level either, you know. You just like, yeah, I actually don't agree with stuff you're just telling me right now. Mm-hmm. So you smile.
And you appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yeah. And you go like, okay.
Yeah, that is it. It's a bit of an epiphany day, you know, where you're like, oh, wow, I'm so confident in the fact that I don't
agree
with what you're saying. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's a good point. Now, I want to wrap this up. I want to talk about your team, because I think managing teams is something we talk a lot about on the show, because I think for a lot of people coming to China, that's a big thing. And most people here have gone local with their teams to build a local product and to do local marketing and things like that. because you're a local hybrid yourself, but your team is nothing local. You're like 75-80% foreigners.
I get that. I actually got people who don't want to talk to me on the phone because like I'm mostly foreigner team, right? But foreigner is not a country, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like the country of foreign and China, right? It's not.
But it feels like it sometimes.
I know.
It's said like that.
It's us and everyone else.
Since I'm doing international, I literally have like one of each from different country. People from Poland, Brazil.
France, Germany.
Oh, I need a German. Holland, Britain, UK.
Like, wait, don't have a German?
I don't have a German yet.
Gotta collect them all.
Oh, what is it?
Gotta collect them all, yeah.
Walter? Where is he from?
Yeah, Holland.
Holland.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But he can speak a bit German.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. That's what I got.
So, yeah. So, for me, if I'm doing international, like, I would like a collective of different opinions, right, from different continent that can give you different advices. Yeah, I also have staff from China, Hong Kong, right? So, wouldn't it be better if I'm doing international business, I have one from everywhere, instead of you just looking at it, oh, these are the white one, right, and this is the Chinese one. It's not very fair, right? Now, if I have the entire team of just Americans and a Chinese person, yeah, I can understand. That's a little lopsided, right? But that's not how I want to do business. The reason why I collect everybody is like when I put out ad, when I put out social media, one person can go like, oh, yeah, in Europe, nobody would like that, right? Another person in like from the States, like, oh, but people in the States would love that. I will find that funny, right? And then we go through our stats and seeing like, okay, right now, people who come to our site are mostly Canadian, American, and Australian. All right. So my ads and my blogs are start gearing toward that because I'm dragging them more, right? So you start shifting how you do things little by little by what kind of target you can get most, right? So low-hanging fruit first. If those are people who come into me first, I don't need to worry about educating the Europe now, right? Getting who I can get first. Same thing, the reason why I started in West and not China, right? So China is not the low-hanging fruit right now, even though they're close by. It's just mentality-wise. It takes a little bit of time to mature, right? So for us, like, whenever I get that question now, that's the one I'm answering. I'm like, no. I'm not having a foreigner team. I have an international team. It's very different than just seeing, like, a bunch of white people, right? Actually, half my staff that who are foreign speak Chinese fine, right? So now you have somebody who have like both side of mind and able to understand why upcycling is great instead of me hiring Chinese staff to teach them what upcycling is in the beginning and not even understanding it. Won't I wasting more time as a startup, especially in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
No, it does not make sense, right? For me, like the whole keep your team tight, keep your team motivated and people who are actually relevant to what you're doing. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that to me is more important. It just so happened that ones I hire are more international and, you know, foreigner. Yeah.
Right? So it's not by design.
No. I have hired a couple of local hires, and just right now I'm not really looking to me, it's a little more difficult because I would like them to be bilingual. It's just that whole culture thing, right? Just for learning the language is not enough, right? Yeah. If you don't understand why we're putting out this ad certain way as opposed to like more words and less picture, right? No, this is a culture thing. I cannot explain the entire culture to you, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Bunny. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on all the success you've had.
Yeah.
How do people find Squirrels or potentially get in touch with you or follow you?
So please go on www.thesquirrels.com. So it's T-H-E, squirrel with a Z at the end. On the Chinese channel, you can just check, search on WeChat. We have our WeChat shop that's all in Chinese. So we kind of take the Chinese part, not really touching it on the online part because mm-hmm. in China it's more mobile first, right? So we do the WeChat shop in Chinese yeah. and online shop in
Twitter,
English.
The right way Twitter, Facebook, it. Instagram.
Yeah, of
any,
course.
Any way to get yes. a hold of you oh, individually?
You just check the squirrels.
The squirrels.
Oh, we everywhere. The squirrels.
Mm-hmm. All right. The squirrels uh-huh. with a Z.
Yeah. And my name is Bunny. Yes, a lot of rodents.
Do you have a Twitter? Do you have an Instagram? Do you have an email?
The squirrels one. Yeah. Bunny@thesquirrels.com.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
Done. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much for coming.
B-U-N-Y. Just regular, not yeah. with I, with Y.
Yeah, that's right. It's the one regular thing about Bunny.
Yeah. one regular thing.
All right. Bunny. Well, thanks very much. Thanks, Ryan, co-host over there.
Thank you.
Thank Bunny for coming in. And thank you, listeners, yeah, for
all listeners
putting up with us for another yeah. show. Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, before we go, I have one favor to ask of you guys. I'm here with Chi Leo, our producer, and what do we want, Chi?
Hi, guys. Please write to us at team@chinastartuppulse.com.
Yeah, because we really want to get your voice on the air. We will ask our next guest the questions that you write us. And who doesn't have any questions about China and startups, Chi?
Yeah, of course we do. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, so give us a ping at team@chinastartuppulse.com.